Our study tonight is out of the book of Hosea, chapter 2, verses 2 through 13, Israel's punishment for neglecting God for Baal. God's punishment is very painful, but afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness, according to Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. This was the theme of Hosea, the deathbed prophet of Israel and the last prophet of the northern kingdom of Israel before it fell to Assyria in divine judgment. Hosea 2, 2-13 predicts God's punishment of Israel for neglecting him for Baal, and we view it for our insight. I want to read the passage, and then we'll look at it. Hosea chapter 2, there's a break between verse 1 and verse 2, so I'm starting at verse 2 and going to verse 13. Plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her immorality out of her sight, and her adulterers from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and set her as the day that she was born, make her as a wilderness and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of immorality. For their mother has played the harlot. She has conceived them, has done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers that give me bread and water and wool and flax, mine oil and my drink. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up the way with thorns and make a wall that she shall not find her paths. And she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. She shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then shall she say, I will go and return to my first husband, for it was better with me then than now. For she did not know that I gave her the grain and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Therefore I will return and take away my grain in the time thereof, my wine in the season thereof, and recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And now I will discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all of her solemn feasts. And I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, whereof she has said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me. And I will make them a forest, or actually a jungle, and the animals of the field shall eat them. And I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she has burned incense to them. She has decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith the Lord. It's interesting, when God uses this analogy between a husband and wife, and he talks a lot about immorality, the culture and the practice, the religious practice of Baal worship plays into this in a huge way. Canaanite Baal worship was marked by gross immorality. Merrill Unger in his Archaeology in the Old Testament points out, so when Israel's people turned from the Lord to worship false local Canaanite Baal gods, from the human perspective, it was as if God as a husband had seen his wife leave to commit adultery with other men. The immoral practices that were performed in the Canaanite worship is so bad. It is so immoral. I can't share it in a public meeting. It was unbelievable how destructive it was. It destroyed family life, marriages, and whatnot. So accordingly, Hosea 2:2-3 predicts the severe punishment of the northern kingdom of Israel for practicing spiritual adultery and exchanging her spiritual devotion to the Lord for the devotion to false Baals. God charged Israel with no longer being his wife and he no longer her husband. Now, there are some who claim that this is a statement of formal divorce because when they would have a divorce, that's the statement that would be made. I'm no longer your husband, you're no longer my wife. But it seems unlikely in the context because God is evidently trying to heal his broken relationship with the nation Israel. Rather, this statement was probably an acknowledgement that no reality remained in the relationship, that Israel had essentially severed her relationship with the Lord as her spiritual husband. She was acting as though he wasn't even her husband, that Baal was her husband, so to speak. So instead of exercising his legal prerogative of having his wayward life executed, this is what they would normally do in the case of adultery, God graciously called Israel to repent in abandoning her false lovers. So in the context of the day, this is a very gracious thing for God to do. Normally, the God, like a husband, would say, let's put her to death. And of course, the death would be a sudden. But God here is calling her to repent. The Lord followed this appeal by a threat of severe punishment were Israel not to repent in verses 3 and 4. First, God threatened to make Israel an object of shame and ridicule. This would occur in the form of drought due to Israel's lust for the false local gods of Baal. And these were the gods of rain and storms. The Baal god, the male god Baal, was the one who provided the rain in their ideology. The female goddess, the goddess of Astarte, was the goddess of collected pools of water down here where the rain collected. And then what would happen is the crops would spring up as a result of the collected pools, and that would be the offspring of Baal and Astarte. That's how these people fought. That was their theology. So what God did is he judged Baal worship here by bringing drought. When you bring drought, that's a critique of Baal. It's a critique of Baal's consort, which is the female goddess Astarte, and a critique of their children because they're not growing any crops. So very interesting how God judges. And second, the Lord would disown the people of Israel, here likened figuratively to the children of spiritually immoral Israel. Instead of fellowship with God would be a broken rapport with the Lord. Now the Lord explained how Israel had turned from him for the false Baals in spiritual adultery in verse 5. Israel had come to think that her lovers, the local Baals that had supposedly brought rain and thus caused the crops and herds to multiply and grow, that they had supplied her with bread and water and wool, flax, oil, and wine. These are all the products of the agriculture. The rain would start the whole process. The animals, of course, they would feed off the crops of the ground, and that's why they would get all the wool and these other things that would grow. Now, to counter the error, God promised to eliminate Israel's access to these gods so that she could only return to the Lord, her true husband, who had been the one who actually gave her these things. Explaining how God would achieve this change in Israel's behavior, God clarified that he would withdraw Israel's production of grain at the time of harvest, he would cut back on her production of wine, and he would cut back on her production of wool and flax, exposing her to false Baal lovers for the spiritual adulteress that she was. The Lord would cause all of Israel's celebratory mirth to cease, her joyful religious celebrations of the yearly festivals, the monthly new moons, and the weekly Sabbath observances, celebrations that had become corrupted by Israel's involvement with the false local Baals. Now, Israel had come to believe that the produce of her vines and her fig trees had been the pay that her Baal lovers had given her for her devotion to them. So in judgment, God would make these plants subject to overgrowth of a jungle. It's actually the word jungle there. And wild animals would eat from them. It'd just be overgrown. Now, since Israel had worshipped the false local Baals, burning incense to them while she decked herself with earrings and jewels, and a figurative expression of seeking to allure the blessings of these gods, the Lord would punish the nation for having forgotten him. It's interesting that the verb forgot, Sakah, is not a memory lapse, but it's a refusal to acknowledge the Lord's goodness and authority. In disobedience to the prophet, Moses' repeat calls that Israel not forget the Lord to worship false gods. When these Old Testament prophets would critique Israel, they always had in mind the Mosaic covenant. And the Mosaic covenant said, you know, make sure that you don't follow after other gods. Stay with this God. Don't go after these other gods, because if you do, there's going to be judgment. And many times God refers to the Mosaic covenant. He implies it as he's speaking through his prophets. You're not keeping the covenant. You're violating the covenant. You're in trouble. So it's fascinating that God is very consistent. Even he's working with the northern kingdom of Israel that has departed from the Lord. It's gotten away from the worship of the Lord, but God still has them accountable to the Mosaic covenant. So God was very angry with Israel for shifting from relying on him to relying on false Baal gods for blessing. For that idolatry was not only physically immoral, but spiritually immoral, a lack of faithfulness to the Lord. So God's call that Israel repent is given with a warning of grave punishment if she were not to repent. So we need to recognize that God strongly desires that we be devoted to Him as opposed to any other God. That idolatry is spiritual adultery, that we then cleave to Him alone for all that we desire and need. It's interesting that the last verse in 1 John, the Apostle John writes to Christians, and he says, little children, keep yourselves from idols. That's amazing that we say that at Christians. Well, an idol is not necessarily an object, as we've said this before. It's an object that, you know, a third world person would fall down and worship. An idol is anything that we look to for satisfaction apart from God. In other words, everything that we get that is any kind of a blessing, we have to remember, is just a blessing. It's not God. It's God providing it, the food that we eat, the beautiful weather that we had today, the roof that you have over your head. There are so many things, and sometimes we get gifts from other people. All of these things are blessings, but they're not God. They're not the source of our blessing. So if we have anything that we have made into a god, we've made it our source of satisfaction, that's an idol. That really makes the Lord upset. And so He'll do anything to get us to shift our allegiance back to Him, away from the thing that He's given us. Someone once made the statement, I looked at Christ and the dove of peace flew into my life. I shifted my gaze from Christ to the dove of peace and it flew away. That's a pretty good example. That's a pretty good statement in regards to this whole issue of idolatry. We have to keep reminding ourselves that any doves of peace that fly into our lives come there only as a result of the Lord. So we must keep our affection, our love on Him.